And I give you the memories how?
Once you open an account with us, you upload files, photos, videos that are already digitized to our chronomatically insulated servers. If you think you've been hit by a phase, call us and we'll do the rest. Phasings, you know, they're just a part of life. But I really think they make the memories more precious.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to Take Me to Your Reader, discussing adapted science fiction at its best and worst. I'm Seth.
I'm James.
And I'm Colin.
And we have already done an episode for November because we talked about Dune, but we wanted to do a standard episode where we talk about something adapted. And it happened that there was a short title available because there was a Robert Silverberg short story that was adapted into a 2021 movie. And they're both called Needle in a Time Stack. And so that's what we're going to talk about. The story is from what?
1966.
Good year. I think my parents got married that year. So if you went back and messed with time, you could make me not happen. Or the rest of my sisters. So no history with any of this?
None.
Nope.
Yeah.
Robert Silverberg?
I had read Nightwings. And one of his stories that was collected in the first Legends anthology for fantasy.
Star Wars Legends?
No. This was all fantasy authors.
Gotcha. Okay. And you know, Robert Silverberg, science fiction grandmaster.
Right.
Still alive? I think still alive.
Still alive. Almost thought about reaching out to him, but he was very particular in several places talking about how retired he was. And he's given us so much over the years, I figured I did not have to pester him. Yes. And there are some opinions of his you can find online about this story in the book collection that we have. Mm-hmm. I did quickly skim an article talking about the original adaptation of the movie. But that was a while ago.
Okay, well, maybe we can get to that. I'm not sure there's a lot of point in going through story and then movie. I think we should just talk about all of it and what's different.
It's a fairly short story.
Yeah.
How
could synopsize the story.
Yeah. What would you say it is, James? It is. It's a beer. It's a shot. It's a...
So what did I have? What was I drinking? I think a glass of wine. There you go.
A wine glass. Very appropriate.
Yeah. All right. Makes sense. In La Jolla.
Yep.
On the beach.
Yeah, you could have.
That's true. That's good of.
In Yosemite.
In Yosemite.
Because that's where James has been recently. Yes. So Robert Silverberg, kind of the same for me. I have not read much of his. I listened to Nightwings when I had like Audible Plus or whatever. It was in that catalog. But not a lot of other experience with his stuff. I've just seen him referenced by a lot of things, like one of the Hugo winners, among others. It's called Among Others.
No, okay.
I saw the look and thought, no, I better just confirm that. The main character is a big science fiction and fantasy
fan,
and you know, talks about world cons and all kinds of stuff. So it's very, very by geeks, for geeks kind of stuff. And she talks about all the different books that she's reading, and she mentioned Silverberg a couple times. So
yeah. So Robert Silverberg loves time travel stories. And the collection I read is an assembly of 16 of his various stories.
We read.
You read it as well.
I skimmed it this afternoon.
Yep. You did. In particular interest is the introduction to this story for Needle in a Time Stack, where the idea came to him when he was at a con where some fan was bothering him, and he said, leave me alone, kid, or I'll change your future. And the guy sitting next to him said, oh, you should change his past instead.
Yeah.
And that was the inception for this story.
Mm-hmm. Inception. That's interesting.
That was funny.
That's an interesting phrase that you use. I read it, by the way, in another anthology called The Time Traveler's Almanac, which is massive. It's like 1,200 pages.
Wow.
It has a bunch of excerpted works as well. So it's got like a key passage from The Time Machine. And so I was concerned as we were watching today, I was like, I don't remember that in the story. And you guys are both like, you should probably reread the story because I thought maybe it didn't have the full thing in mind because I knew it excerpted some other stuff, but it ended in the same place. So,
okay.
So I think it's the same thing. And just for people who don't want to be spoiled, story is 12, 13 pages long. You can easily read it in one sitting.
So what was it? 20 minutes, 15 minutes?
I skimmed it. I was just looking for some key passages. I think when I read it originally, it took about a half hour.
Oh, okay. So,
one sitting kind of story. So if you don't want to be spoiled, go and read it. Needle in a Time Stack.
Yeah. I actually read it and then handed it off to Emily and she read it.
Oh, okay. Oh, we get an M rating then.
Yes. And
we did. Yes.
Was she a fan? We should maybe talk about what the story's about and why right. Emily might have opinions. Oh, yeah. I mean, because normally, well, as a woman, she wouldn't have opinions.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah, naturally.
This is one of the classic
tropes. If I want your opinion, I give it to you.
This is one of the classic tropes in all stories. You know, boy finds girl, girl divorces boy, girl hooks up with boy's best friend. And so boy spends all of his family's resources trying to change time to get her back.
Right.
Right.
And it's told from the point of the boy's best friend. So he's kind of our protagonist, mm-hmm. and he does not appreciate, you know, someone trying to take his wife away, even mm-hmm. though she had been married to someone else first.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. And so this is another story where time tourism is a thing, right? Like in A Sound of Thunder, mm-hmm. yep. right? But in that, it's very much be careful, stay on the path, don't change anything. Where in right. this one, it's like, yeah, you can do, you know, your tourism, and it probably won't really affect anything. Nothing major happens. And the time shifts are just something that is a fact of life. Everybody has a different tell. And the main mm-hmm. character's tell is he tastes cotton in his mouth, like dry mouth or something.
Right.
And then they quickly, when that kind of stuff happens, they'll quickly reassess, because there's lingering memories, right? For a couple of hours, it takes a while for the new timeline to kind of
settle in,
yeah, yeah, and be permanent.
Well, another interesting aspect of this that they keep bringing up is you can pretty much pay for anything, do whatever you want, right?
Right, yeah.
Versus Sound of Thunder, where I don't yeah. care how much, I mean, it was only rich people, well, I guess either way, it's only rich people.
All I'm saying is I want a huge crossover between this movie, A Sound of Thunder, and Time Cop.
Oh, wow, yeah.
We're the time police.
Yes, exactly.
Well, the difficulty is that within a few hours, all memories of the original timeline have been erased. And so it's very difficult to prove what they call time crime.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So anyhow, like Colin said, right, the plot here is you have the main character who's married to Janine, and they've been married a while. They have a couple kids. They have a yep. cat. And
a dog. Dog.
Was there a dog in the book? There's not a dog in the book.
No,
there isn't. Because I just checked.
Right.
Because I was curious. And they suspect that her ex-husband has been going back to change time to try and get back together with her, because he regrets that they broke up. And this guy's personality, his name is Tommy, he doesn't go to Troy. He doesn't go to ancient Egypt. He goes back in his own personal time and makes little tweaks
mm-hmm.
And it says even like to make his life more perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't, I didn't think he was nearly OCD about his timeline in the movie as he was in this mm-hmm. book.
No, he was way more casual.
Yeah.
Way more casual yeah. about it.
But I got the impression in the movie though that he didn't really jaunt a whole lot as much as in the book either.
Okay, here we go. The purpose of Tommy Hambleton's time travel, it seemed, was to edit his past to make his life more perfect. He went back to eliminate every little contretemps and faux pas, to recover fumbles, to take advantage of the new opportunities that hindsight provides, to retouch, to correct, to amend.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
Obsessive.
Obsessive, right. And it's one of those privileges of his position, being super rich.
Mm-hmm.
So, I know people that go back and script their audio obsessively too. It's
just, yeah, I don't know. You can't trust those guys.
No.
I try and do it in such a way that it's not noticeable. But
did you hook up the pitch corrector to me this time?
No.
Okay.
No, definitely not. So Emily's take on this one, because basically the women in this story are treated as possessions of the men.
She said it was very Mad Men. And so when I told her it was published in Playboy, she was like, that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess we didn't mention that, did we? That it was published in Playboy.
Yeah.
Although Silverberg was massively productive in his earlier years
mm-hmm.
and then eventually started slowing down a little bit. But I think at one point he was creating a short story per month.
Wow.
And did that while he was in college full time.
Hmm. And then he sent it to the editors. They came back with suggestions. Then he jaunted to the past to make those suggestions. Everybody was like, wow, first draft. This is incredibly polished.
Yes.
That could be useful in college.
True.
Like you bomb a test and you just jaunt quickly to the past. That's what it is. The new Stanford scandal, you know, with what's her face from Full House. You know, instead of paying people to get your daughter into Stanford, you just have her take a test and then you use your massive resources to send her back in time to get the answers right.
Until she gets it right.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, in this, if your past is altered, all your records are altered. And so like if you mm-hmm. have a family photo album of your wife and kids and that kind of stuff, and then a time shift happens and you're married to somebody else, well, then your photo album is filled with pictures of your new family.
Right.
And you just have those fleeting memories. And then people just kind of go, yeah, okay. I mean, yep, the new one's okay. Okay. I guess we'll just roll with it.
Well, and in a couple hours, you won't remember differently anyway.
Right. Yeah. Right.
It was just kind of a way of life.
Mm-hmm. Which is where I think the story actually crosses over into horror.
Yeah.
When you talk about ripping away someone's children and causing them not to exist anymore, when you talk about, mm-hmm, you know, having your wife taken away from you,
yeah,
all these things, that's definitely horror.
Yeah.
All the horrible possible side effects of time travel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. My problem with it is I feel like the women are kind of possessions of the men, and that's the, mm-hmm, way this all works. It's all about these men. And not that this doesn't have a history in either history or fiction, because you have a lot of things where it's men fighting over women because,
right,
they're stupid.
Oh, yeah. So you don't have a problem with the classism, though.
Well, there is classism there, too, right?
Yeah.
Because the rich people can
do whatever they want.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, that's why.
Kind of reminded me of Squid Game.
Yeah. Yeah. Or a little bit.
Let's critique on America or whatever.
Of capitalism.
Capitalism. Yeah, yeah.
Big time.
Yeah.
But like, the consent issues with going back in time to manipulate events, essentially, so that you can get with them. It's the Groundhog Day problem. You know, mm-hmm, if you have infinite retries,
right,
with a girl, eventually you're going to find the right words to get her into bed. She doesn't know she's not really consenting to that because she rejected you 99 times before the 100th time finally worked. But it's icky.
Right.
Yeah. So similar kind of things here.
Hence Mad Men.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I was thinking about how much worse, like the Civil War lost cause people and the election was stolen people would be if we knew that time could be manipulated.
Oh, they'd be, wow.
They'd be like, you know, the 2000 election,
oh,
you know,
yeah,
the hanging chads and that kind of stuff. I mean, people already believe that elections are manipulated, but not that way, right?
Yeah. Or via time travel?
Mm-hmm.
No,
right.
Not yet. But they haven't come up with that one yet. Yeah. I'm sure it'll be coming out soon.
Yeah. So like you hinted at, Colin, there at some point the guy succeeds, right? First he succeeds and that their wedding date is like 5 months later.
Where
they remember summer wedding, but really they got married in February.
Right.
But they both remember and they're both like, okay, that's not that big of a deal. But maybe we should prosecute this guy, but where's the proof? And then eventually he succeeds completely and she's now married to Tommy instead, yep, of married to Nick. And she just kind of goes, you know, I guess this is just what it is. I'm married to Tommy now and our kids don't exist. But, you know, go on with your life.
Yeah.
Continue on. Surprising.
What about Gus and Max?
Poor cats.
Or Minnabelle. Yeah. So anyhow, as a response to that, Nick goes back in time and realizes that there might have been a different path that he could set Tommy on to keep him from ever being married to Janice. Is it Janice?
Janine.
Yeah. And so he goes back and does his little jaunt, and then everybody's happily ever after. Although then he comes back and they're not married.
Right.
But they end up meeting, right? And it's like both of them have some inkling that they have a connection,
yeah,
right at the end. Because she's like, have we met before? And he says, oh, it's a long story. Which I'm like, how does he remember any of that story?
Yeah.
But because essentially he goes back in time, breaks up with his current girlfriend that he thinks Tommy will get with, and then writes himself a note and says, get over your girlfriend quick and just deal with it.
And wait.
Yeah, and wait. I mean, there's some problems with this story just because of some of the consent issues and that kind of stuff. And it's written by an old white guy. It's not that surprising that there's perhaps some problematic elements. The women don't really have agency.
Well, it was written 50 years ago.
Yeah.
So one, if that story was written today, you could say, you know, it was written by an old white guy.
Right.
It wasn't written by an old white guy.
Right.
It was written by a middle-aged white guy to a very popular audience. And yeah, this kind of fiction was par for the course, so to say, right? Very common.
I do think that that's a good point. Because I've been thinking about this because I've been talking with somebody about doing an interview about my other podcast, about reading from the different times and what's that like. And one thing that I think is it's not always fair to judge old fiction against our current values and the way we see things, right? The way society has changed. And it's very appropriate to look at something and go, okay, seen from the lens of today, that seems very regressive.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But look at it in terms of, you know, where it was in the current society and might actually be progressive for that time. Somebody, one of my guests on there had a term for that, vintage woke. where like something that was progressive for the time, but now we see as regressive. But it's fair to credit it for being what it was. This one, you know, I don't know. This is very much in the spirit of classic Trek, right? The way the way female characters were treated on classic Trek.
Yes.
Right? I just can't get used to a woman on the bridge. Like, really?
Yep. Just wear a miniskirt and shriek. You got your part.
Yes, as Dax said, the women wore less. Yeah.
Yeah, I would say for back then, it was very typical.
Yeah.
But compared to all the other stuff we've seen back then, too. Mm-hmm. Like The Fly and like...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, all the stuff, yeah. And it's always Emily's like common criticism from all the old science fiction videos. She always balks at the sexism.
Yeah.
She can't blame her. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess we didn't talk about if we enjoyed the story.
I think I did.
I first thought, you know, this is a time travel story. Yeah. I'm 50. I've read a lot of time travel. I've watched a lot of time travel. I'm not going to learn a lot. Mm-hmm. I read many of the books of the short stories in that collection, and I learned a lot about the potential damages and things about time travel. Mm. And I'm going to talk some more about that when we get to the movie. But it was awful. I love my wife and my kids. I would be horrified to know that one, I could lose them in a moment's notice and then never know or care about them again because they never existed.
Right.
So, it's great science fiction.
Yeah.
Really good science fiction.
Yeah.
But man, I don't like the message. Mm-hmm. I don't like the story and I don't want that to happen.
I was thinking one of the interesting things in here to think about is like the contingency of relationships. Like I can think of if I was 5 minutes earlier to chemistry lab, I probably end up with a different lab partner than Elaine, than my wife.
Oh.
And we lived in the same building, but if we didn't establish that friendship then, because she realized I knew what I was talking about and she didn't know, because she'd never had high school chemistry.
Right.
And so, you know, we were given this sheet and, you know, you do this molarity and that. And I was like, oh yeah, I know how to do this. And so I was valuable to her and I helped her with her homework a bit. And so even though, like, I always tell this story, we met in chemistry lab and then she dropped the class, which was true. She did drop the class, but it was a couple weeks later when she realized, no, I can't cut this. I need to take a more remedial class before
I get to general chemistry. Are you sure it wasn't because of you?
It could have been. I didn't dress very well back then. The contingency of that and like, if I didn't go to the same college, if I didn't go to the same college, I never meet her.
Right.
And it's the weird kind of stuff to think about. Or if you ever like, I remember having a dream one time that we had a kid and then I woke up and we didn't have any kids because we hadn't had any yet.
Oh, wow.
Not a recent dream. Yeah. So then I've looked back and I'm like, was that kid Ethan? I don't know. Was it like a glimpse of the future or something?
Was like, a big blonde strapping lad.
Yeah. I mean, like you meeting Kathy, how did it happen? You don't have to tell us the whole story, but.
It actually happened a couple times. Mm. So, I marched next to her on the marching band field.
Okay.
And I thought she was kind of this, you know, cute freshman flute player. Mm-hmm. And I tell the story so that shouldn't be anything embarrassing about it, but I was actually trying to date a friend of hers and I would go upstairs and hang out with her. And then Kathy would come over 10 minutes later and then the girl would walk out of her room and she'd be gone the whole rest of the evening and we would study and talk and play cards. And I just started spending more and more time with Kathy. Mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, one of the things was, she almost became a professional juggler and did not go to college. And then she changed her mind. Mm-hmm. And I had just that summer learned how to, a couple summers back, had learned how to juggle. So we started doing some juggling together. So she taught me juggling and just spent more and more time together. And I realized, you know, what an awesome person she is. I mean, she was beautiful and smart and wonderful. And
did you become better at juggling your classes?
Actually, that term, I had 21 credits and I had a 4-point. So I did very well.
Wow.
Well, there you go. See? Thank you, Kathy.
Yes. She was awesome.
So basically, like if you had kept trying to pursue the friend, maybe nothing ever comes of it.
Yeah. But if she had decided to pursue her juggling career instead of going to school, or if she'd been in a different dorm, or if we hadn't first bumped into each other on the marching band field to get that first like, oh, I recognize you thing going on.
Yeah. What about you? Is there like a fine point at which you and Emily never happen? Or was it destined?
Good question.
Wait, is it a circle?
It was destined.
Is it a circle?
Our love is like a circle. Because we met in church.
And your family's your friends, right?
Our family's church, yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Probably a little more certain.
Yeah, maybe a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think, maybe if that hadn't happened. Yeah, because then I wouldn't have known her. So there you go. That'd be the one event.
If maybe if you'd gone into the Army instead of the Navy. Then she's like, I don't know, Army guys.
Yeah. Army pukes.
Jugheads.
Yeah.
Jarheads. There you go. Oh, that's Marines anyway. But
so anyway, I thought that was interesting just to think about like, the story talks about it, the movie talks about it, about, you know, you get to get together with somebody and there's a ripple effect that when you get together with that person, then they don't get together with perhaps somebody else.
Right.
It's just... the whole notion of like possessing that person.
She's mine.
Yeah, she's mine and she will be mine, you know. And it's a classic movie villain thing, right? If I can't have her, no one will.
Right.
Even like in Tenet, right, recently. Oh, you've only watched part of it. You watched far enough to meet Kenneth Branagh.
Yes.
Do we want to talk about the movie?
There was something else you mentioned that I wanted to circle back around about if I can't have her.
Nobody can.
There's a stopgap, and that is they met through Tommy. So you can't just go and erase Tommy or bend him over out of their lives. Sorry.
Right.
A different way to approach things, I suppose. Colin's recovering from surgery.
Yeah, I'm recovering from surgery. I haven't had opioids in 3 days, so I should be just fine, theoretically.
All right. Turn your head and cough and then continue.
Well, coughing is bad.
Okay.
Coughing is bad. You almost took me out today when we were laughing at it. I can't remember what the joke was, but it's quite funny.
Yeah,
so Tommy's protected because he's the one that connects them together. And so she's afraid of Nick going back and doing anything, which will prevent them from ever knowing one another.
Right.
And that's exactly what Nick does when he loses her anyway, in the vain hope that they'll get back together somehow.
And
in the story, at least they do.
Yeah, I kept thinking of ways he could get away with actually going back in time and killing him, but then again, that wouldn't work because then they would never meet, right?
Right.
Yeah. Well, unless they conspired to kill him together.
Right.
Okay, so
time paradox.
The story does not show them getting back together. It just shows them meeting again and kind of having that intuition that there's something there.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm always looking for the happy ending, so I probably read into that.
Yeah.
That they would get back together.
Yeah. So...
Yeah, it seemed like the logical conclusion to me as well. Mm-hmm. Not just you.
So the movie, we noticed that the production company was Pacific Northwest Productions or whatever. And it was filmed in Vancouver,
BC. British Columbia. Yeah.
It's cheap. Stars Leslie Odom Jr. and Cynthia Erivo. I actually don't know how to pronounce her name. I was looking it up, but
I think it is. I read the Wikipedia entry, and as you read the phonics, I think it's Erivo.
Okay.
I think. And if I'm wrong, I apologize.
Right. And Frida Pinto and
Orlando Bloom is Tommy.
Orlando Bloom is Tommy. That's right. And he is a lovely looking man, I have to say, as a straight dude. It's a good looking dude. He's aged well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. I didn't initially recognize him actually in that little screenshot there was on the TV.
Wow.
I was like, oh yeah, it is Orlando Bloom. Damn.
Yeah. This is the first thing that I've seen Cynthia Erivo in with her actual accent. Everything else she's been American.
Oh, wow.
So
that's cool.
Oh, yeah. Funny.
Yeah. I mentioned this, but she was picked to play the role of Elphaba in Wicked that's coming out on as a movie.
Yeah. Let's talk about the movie. It was filmed in 2018.
Right.
And then has been in post-production since then, which it's, you hear about development
post-production for two plus years.
Yeah. Because it just came out.
That's crazy.
Like a lot of editing that went on with it. And I don't know, you know, if they had to do it. I didn't see anything about reshoots or anything. It's just like they were trying to find the film in there and they found something. it's not really well received. It's about 50% on Rotten Tomatoes. So.
34%.
I think it was like 4.9.
Audience score was 50%. Reviewer score was 34%. Some people thought, you know, that it was deeply moving with a lot of, insight about the nature of relationships and like we were talking about who do you love and how. What can I say about it? I can say that it is really canonical. I mean, there are canonical elements that are lifted right from the book. I don't think it's down to the point of dialogue, but all the characters are maintained. They talk about the little things like, you know, the cat, you know, whether you went from a dog owner to a cat owner.
Well, yeah, they didn't maintain the cat characters.
But. No, but they kept pets in view. Right.
Yeah.
So there were little changes that were happening all the time as Tommy was trying things to pull them apart. And, you know, eventually, you know, he found something that works. I take issue at the special effects because they didn't need to be there.
The time wave kind of thing?
The time wave, like a tidal wave coming through. And it literally looks like a tidal wave.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I would have just loved if, you know, he had gone...
Yeah, I think feel like they could have done something where they zoom in on him or pan, you know, like zoom in on him, and you can see in his facial features that he's getting cotton mouth and there's something happening.
Yeah, I think,
and maybe you see it and have it come up in dialogue later with Janine, and that would establish the phasing, and then also establish that it kind of affects people differently.
Right.
Instead of everybody having a bloody nose.
Did it show everybody having bloody noses? It showed him. And
well, she had one. He had one. Okay. I guess it depends. It didn't seem in the movie anyway, especially for the first time phase, that it was apparent that everybody in the boardroom saw it or felt it.
Yeah.
But
not everybody was affected.
Not everybody was affected, yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, the nosebleed thing is, like, at this point, a tired science fiction trope about, you know, using your abilities, like all the way back to Firestarter.
Yep. Right.
And Stranger Things and many other places, even on, like, on Heroes, right? When Matt Parkman would be trying really hard to read somebody's mind, his nose would start bleeding. So it's like easy shorthand rather than having him do the mouth thing, right?
Lazy.
You can't even make yourself do the mouth thing, can you?
I felt like it was a little lazy. A little lazy, and it didn't affect, not all the time phases affect everybody. Why would they?
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
And so if you have the giant tidal wave coming through the boardroom affecting everybody in the boardroom,
right,
it would have been more interesting to have it only affect him, and then he's like, you know, kind of zonked out for that 5 minutes, and everybody around him is like, are you okay, dude? Or something like that, you know?
And he's like, oh, time shift.
Yeah. Yeah, and then like, oh, okay.
You fall asleep in a meeting. People are like, hey, wake up. And I'm like, sorry, it was time shift. I mean, it's totally. Wasn't that the meeting was super boring. Yeah. I did like.
Trust me, Chrono Bismol.
He's.
I love it.
Nice. You had that one in your quiver the whole time? Try not to laugh, Colin. It hurts.
Trying not to.
That's a good one.
I just thought of it.
That's the episode
title.
And now
you're paying the price.
Oh, I'm paying the price.
I did like that. You show him Nick in a meeting like three or four different times, and it's the exact same meeting every time.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
And that is a very true
That's kind of how it
thing
goes,
of corporate meetings.
We all need to consider the consequences of our actions and the Downstein ramifications of what things we may do or may not choose to do. And
yes, that's usually me that does that kind of thing. But
they don't consider ramifications of their actions in corporate America.
Right.
They were so concerned, was trying to figure out if they could do it. They didn't stop to think if they should.
Right. So overall thoughts on the movie. It's kind of a slog.
Oh my goodness. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's about 2 hours long, I think.
150, 149, 151.
Okay. Yeah. It's boring.
You know? Yeah, it is. I was trying. I mean, the short story is nice and short. You're in, you're out, you're there. Adapting that into a full feature length movie requires 80 extra pages of Stephen King quality content.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And there were some innovations they made to it. Like, you know, there was the side story about his sister and that, you know, she went back in time.
Right.
But then they broke the trope because she remembered, and she's not supposed to remember that she changed the time stream because the time stream changed and her girlfriend.
Right. Yeah.
Well, but she would have a personal memory of going back in time. Otherwise, there'd be a paradox, right? So she would have the personal memory that she did.
There's
that.
Always a paradox.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's why time travel doesn't exist.
I liked some of the innovations, right? I liked the notion that what was it called? Pass Protect.
Oh my goodness.
Pass Protect.
Right.
Our chronomatically
which I totally called as a scam because he got screwed with it in the end anyway.
That reminded me of in The Flash. At some point, there's a character who's come back from the future and she's changing the past, but she has a journal where she's written in this code that automatically that stays the same regardless of changes to the time stream, like, because it's like an advanced future thing that she's able to do.
Oh sure, why not?
You know, that'd be really nice.
If advanced future time proof code,
right? Time proof code, yeah. chronomatically protected servers, right?
chronomatically isolated.
Yeah, and you know, obviously, I could tell that the filmmakers were going for a circle metaphor. Because you have, I think, at least three times you hear the whole monologue.
Yeah.
They start off with it, and then you hear a longer version of it, and then you hear the shorter version again.
Right. Right before she goes away.
Right. And then you have that. I think visually what they were going for with, because what happens is his time gets changed. He goes back to the Pass Protect place and says, my wife's gone. I need my stuff. And they're like, I'm sorry, we've lost everything. You can get your refund. And then eventually they call him after he's adjusted to the new timeline and being married to Alex instead of Janine. they tell him we got something, and it's just a little fragment. And I think that is supposed to kind of be a visual representation of the needle in the time stack. It's just the one little fragment of time. Mm. I think if you ask the filmmakers, I think that's what they were going for. That's what I got from it.
Yeah.
Where that's the needle. Yeah. But, and that's enough to kind of make him think, okay, yeah, there's something's mm. wrong here. After he had adjusted and, you know, romanced his wife a little bit and his
wait, new, so new what's wife. Your theory on what the needle is in the story then?
I don't know that there is one, but I think just kind of making a movie based on that story with that name, yeah. I think they wanted to have that.
I thought the needle was him looking for the event that would actually fix it.
That could be. That could
for be. Tommy?
For Tommy and for Nick.
For Nick.
Yeah, but Nick is one and done. He goes back, breaks up with his girlfriend.
Yeah, because he has a really good magnet to find that needle in the haystack.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tommy's magnet sucks.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that was for me. That's why I kind of thought the needle was an event that would provide the solution you're looking for, yeah, whether it was Tommy or Nick or whatever.
So I think one of the things, even though I don't really like the movie, I like that they humanized Tommy a little more.
Yeah.
And they did that. Mm-hmm. And this is where they got the female viewpoint in there a little more, where they had a character with some empathy for him in Alex.
Right.
And so I thought that was nice character development for her. It's Yvonne in the story, but Alex.
Well, they changed Janine too a little bit in that, right? She was, yeah, kind of defending Tommy.
Right. She was. She had some sympathy for him as well.
Right.
But they also made him not just be a complete jerk ass,
right,
even though he's doing this stuff. And it's just like he. I mean, it's hard to be an apologist for rich people, right? And she kind of does that to him, and he's like, seriously? Yeah. And she's like, no. I mean, like, not knowing if people like you because of your money or if they like you for you. And like, I mean, it's rich people problems, I guess.
First world problems.
Yeah, pretty much. But it does humanize him a little bit. And like, it talked about how they were friends. It talked about it in the story as well. But like, I can't get to the end of the story and think that they're really friends. Because, right, of all the stuff that he did, even though he did it in the other one, but somehow he's just, I don't know, he's a little more likable. Maybe it's just Orlando Bloom. Maybe
it's just have a man Orlando crush. Bloom. Yeah. It's your man crush.
Could be.
Yeah, but they end his story differently. They talk about how his life changed, how Alex really kind of, you know, encouraged him to go off and kind of strike off things on his own, where in the previous timeline, he really was.
That's the Inception thing, because you mentioned Inception, right? That's the whole point, is trying to get Cillian Murphy to break off from and not inherit his father's companies.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Funny. Yeah. And I mean, the story has it there too, where like he doesn't do the time jaunting anymore. Like he uses it for normal tourism kind of stuff with his new wife.
Right. But you know, you could easily spin this story a third way, where Tommy is the guy trying to get his wife back because he knows he is screwed up and he's trying to do it.
Yeah.
And he's willing to do it at all costs, mm-hmm, including the cost of losing his good friend, Nick.
Yeah.
And I think it's that perspective that the movie brings out. Because it talks about their friendship, and you know, Nick goes back in time and goes, hey, you know, we're good friends, and I just want you to know that me and Alex aren't working out, and that she really seems to like you,
yeah,
and I know you like her, and if it isn't working out between us, I want you guys to be happy. Mm-hmm. And you know, in the back of my head, I'm knowing, and that way he has a chance of eventually getting Janine, right, maybe. Mm-hmm. But yeah, every time something happens, they lose more time together. They lost their family. They lost 5 months of their wedding.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And now, yeah, I'm hopping between story and movie, but yeah, just the costs seem large.
Yeah.
I never even liked cats.
the other thing is like the notion that somehow Nick messing with the past makes Tommy a happier person, right? Because it's not that the actions of a happy person are not going back and trying to correct his mistakes and trying to get his wife back.
Right.
And so I somehow like that works on his character a little bit too. And in both the story and the movie, where it's like he was obsessed with this one thing and he had an obsessive personality, but being with the right person who ended up being Alex or Yvonne, made it so he was all of a sudden not, he's content, right? And where he was not contented before. Mm-hmm. The movie, the ending of the movie is a little more ambiguous than the book.
Yeah.
In the story, because it doesn't even have them really meet. But the movie, right, establishes the, if you just saw me, even if you hadn't met me, would you still love me? But it's got that. And so that's they paying that off at the end. Right.
Yeah. Although when he walks out the door and then reaches back and grabs the frame, I'm like, mm-hmm, why didn't you just turn around again suddenly? Why do you grab the frame? What does that signify? And there's one other thing I wonder about.
There's something in his mind telling him, don't leave this room. That's I think that's what that's symbolizing.
Yeah. So this movie was critically panned.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, 34% is not a good score. Mm-mm. We've watched worse. We'll probably watch worse in the future.
As I've said, we have plumbed the depths of the tomato meter.
Yeah. But what convinces highly skilled actors like Orlando Bloom and Leslie Odom Jr. and Cynthia Erivo mm-hmm. and Frida Pinto to become involved with this?
Well, I think your answer probably lies in that 2+ years of post-production stuff.
No, but it's 2018, right? So how you have to get them attracted?
Yeah, but we're watching the final product, not what was messed with a million times by the studio.
Oh, but who know who did the messing?
Yeah,
we just know it was under editing for like a year to a year and a half.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I would have been. It's always the gripe. Fox Studios and Taurus for this, right? Ruining superhero movies,
right?
So I'm thinking along those lines is who. It could have been something maybe completely different before they post-product it.
Yeah.
I don't know. But yeah, you got a good point with they're attracting, A-list peoples. Why wasn't this a better movie?
Yeah.
That just makes me wonder. I'm curious if the answer lies in the post-production process.
Okay, so we've done this before, right? Not a real good movie. How would you fix it? I mean, for me, like the pacing is way off. It's like sad Leslie Odom Jr. for three quarters of this movie. It's a quiet movie. It's not dialogue heavy. I usually appreciate that if mm-hmm. it's not just like pans across rooms for no reason.
Right. Oh, yeah. Like you were saying, you could have eliminated, 20 minutes or 40 minutes of panning?
Yeah. Yeah. And, I kept pointing out the circles, because I was like, okay, mm-hmm. this is a little heavy handed with the metaphor of the circle.
Right.
And it's not working for me.
Yeah.
So I think they were really, going for that, but I didn't really
get the point of it.
Yeah.
Except maybe the eternity of love or something, I guess.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's you always I guess that's what they're going speeches for. At weddings about rings, right?
And rings, yeah, exactly. Probably explore the time jaunting thing a little bit more. I feel like it wasn't really well established as a societal norm.
How do you get people interested in this kind of a script?
Right.
Is it a mark? I mean, I can't believe it's a mark on a contract where they said, I have to do 5 films and this gets me out of one because it's completely independently done.
Right.
There had to be something that interested all these people. And yet critics did not enjoy it. We did not enjoy it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good question. I mean, I think everybody goes into a movie thinking this is going to be great. There are things where you hear from people who are like, I was, like you said, just doing this because I was under contract to do 3 films for the studio.
Right.
But this is not a major studio thing.
Yeah, not a big studio.
So this is a passion project for somebody that lacked some passion.
So then maybe we're missing something. Is there some artistic interpretation of this that...
We don't watch art movies.
We do watch art movies. We watch 2000.
You like Annihilation. That's true.
That's a good point.
Arrival and other...
Yeah.
No, yeah. I was thinking of Colin. Colin doesn't watch art movies.
No, I don't watch it. I don't enjoy art movies. But it's so canonical. I want to redeem it somehow.
Yeah.
And I don't know how do you increase the pacing?
Yeah.
Well, that's what I was thinking is if they could have explored the whole time jaunting thing more and packed more content into the movie instead of panning for half an hour.
And the other thing is, it's easy to look at a movie that's pretty canonical and look at the stuff that was added and go, well, that's where the problem was, right? But I liked all the stuff with the sister. I thought she was a good person to have him bounce off of. I actually liked all of that. I kind of liked the plot point of the whatever the past protect place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah.
That was funny.
And I loved how they, in the short story, as soon as he comes back, he knows something is wrong. And so before his memory fades, he goes and does a jaunt.
Right.
Right. In the movie, there's a long period of time where he accepts the current reality. And then he gets the message from Time Save. And then Alex talks about how much Tommy got them together.
Right.
Is that what that was?
And so I think that brought all those seeds of doubt back to the forefront until mm-hmm. the point where he decides, I'm going to go back and I'm going to get you and Tommy together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I have to wait and see what happened. It took way too long
for him to go back in time to get Alex and Tommy together. I'm like, your memory's only supposed to last 2 or 3 hours. It's been established several times in the movie.
Yeah. If you're going to establish rules, you need to follow them.
Although that's what screwed me up with Zoe. I'm like, rule was broken, I guess.
Well, okay, so here's I think a major problem in trying to adapt this really, really canonically, right? If you take away his kids, everything is much more urgent, and he probably never does the thing where he warms up to his new reality with Alex. Because you're missing your kids, you're going to do anything you can to you know, like I said, Memento, when we were talking about right. during the movie because we were bored.
Right.
Put a tattoo on yourself that, you know, I used to have two kids and a cat.
Yeah. But that would fade too.
The tattoo would?
Yeah.
All
in theory.
In the story, it talks about how you could even write stuff down and that will fade right. with time too.
And because how the hell did past present work?
It's quantum something.
That was.
Yeah. Quantum something.
Chronomatically isolated.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Somehow I think that would drive more urgency to it, but then you wouldn't be able to take the pace right. that you had in the movie. And that since the pacing is
I'm okay with my that. Major issue, that pace, I think it was yeah. terrible anyway.
Yeah. But then you probably miss out on some of the character development for Tommy. Eh. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure how to fix it.
Yeah.
I'm not a screenwriter, not a filmmaker, so.
Well, and then there's a question. Can we fix it so that we like it, or can we fix it so that critics like it?
Right.
Anytime science fiction becomes more introspective and slow, you lose more and more audience.
Yeah, but I mean, like Midnight Mass, right? Very, very introspective and slow. Right. And told across a longer amount of time. And so that lets you kind of get into the rhythm of it.
Yeah.
But you can do it. There's plenty of slowish movies that, you know, are enjoyable.
Yeah. I guess there's that slow reveal where, you know, they kind of know that it's Tommy up front, but you know, maybe you make Tommy a true villain and he starts dropping hints that he's done it. Like, cause they met him once in the story.
Yeah. Right.
And,
he ends up washing their car at the end, like Biff Tannen. Yeah, I don't know. Not sure how to fix it.
No. Yeah, I'm not sure how to find this needle.
Yeah.
I still want to believe it's possible to adapt it into something that's well received and popular, but yeah. I don't know.
Anything else to say about this one?
Don't think so.
I don't think so.
Okay.
We should rank them.
Yeah. Okay. Go for it.
Short story movie.
Okay.
Short story movie.
Yeah, I think I have to go. Short story movie as well. I was thinking of going movie just because I liked some of the innovations of it, but
not enough innovations.
Yeah, it's one of those things where sometimes when you, I didn't love either of them. I thought the story was fine. I thought the movie was not good, but short story is shorter, so we'll go with that.
There are those pieces, yeah. Right?
Yeah. So, okay, so that's it. So for next time, we're talking about doing something for Christmas, and we haven't completely landed on it. But the possibilities at this point are we just talk about the new Christmas Carol musical.
I can't find it.
You can't find it?
I can't find it anymore.
Is it not going to be broadcast somewhere?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, then the other thing we could do is there's a new movie coming out on HBO Max called 8-Bit Christmas about one kid's obsessive search or attempt to get a Nintendo back in the late 80s. And this is something that, or maybe I guess nice. mid-80s. I've already started reading it, and it's already, it's like, it's just nostalgia for me just because I remember being that kid. So I think it's a quick read. It's something like 300 pages, but it's going by fast. So we could do that. It's available on Kindle Unlimited if you get your 30-day trial. Then we could do that. For now, that we want to tentatively plan that, and then if something else comes up, we do that.
This one sounds cool. And, you said you had the book, right?
It's not science fiction, but it is Christmas. So,
I have an idea for January.
Oh, lay it on us.
It turns out that The Running Man, there was a lawsuit against it claiming plagiarism for a completely different adapted work. Really? There was a Robert Sheckley story called The Prize of Peril, which was adapted to a German movie and a French movie, and the French movie sued The Running Man and won, claiming that they had just taken the premise directly from their movie and used that instead. And it was so similar, it was found to be in violation.
Adapted?
Yeah, from Robert Sheckley.
That's right.
Yeah.
I think I have a collection of Robert Sheckley stories. Was he the 10th victim? Was that the 7th victim, I guess?
Oh, yeah.
Standard eBook has a collection of his, which contains the story in question.
Okay.
But trying to find the German and the French movies.
Yeah. So that it's a nice idea. I like it. But yeah. We'll let you know around the Christmas episode if we're going to be doing that.
Yeah.
Because I'm not opposed to watching some foreign cinema.
Yep. Yeah. There's always Die Hard 2.
It is adapted. Christmas. It's just not in the detective series that the previous one was.
Oh, that's true.